So Ryan.
Gilbert.
Can you hear me? Yes.
Yeah.
Why don't I go ahead and kick off and then you connect all the dots?
Okay, I can go through what we covered at the IAC meeting last couple weeks ago, and then you can fill in from there.
No, I'm going to go first, and then you're going to fill in.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Discussion sheet, and then why don't you kick us off, and then I can backfill from there.
Yeah. So the IAC meeting was, first of all, it was well attended. It was probably a busier meeting than normal, but we got through it. There were a couple of, I'll call it, housekeeping things related to IPS on things like concentration limits for the overall portfolio, things like defining fiduciary, as certain items just sort of popped up in due course. So we reviewed all of those housekeeping matters and got that behind us. And then we went in pretty good detail on the safety reserve, everything that Ryan already talked about, and confirmed that we wanted to replenish it because that's what it's there for, but to potentially use some of the overage, you know, as needed into other areas and to potentially take advantage of some of the market movements that are going on today. We went through a little bit of ESG education. Most of the audience already was really aware of it, but Makita went through some of the highlights, and so I thought that was a pretty good exercise. And then, of course, we went through one of our emerging manager debt managers' portfolio underperformance as we're beginning to look at some emerging manager debt type search and where we are. So we reviewed all of those things. And then in due course, just know that at every one of these meetings, we kind of look at where we are, update on either performance or other things related to the overall portfolio. But it was a pretty packed meeting. And I think now that we have some of the new members attending in person, we all generally attended in person. I really see a good rhythm going forward. Ryan, I'll let you connect all the dots there.
Connected most of them. But, yeah, it was our first in-person meeting in over 2 years. We had the three new members on the committee attend the meeting. On the safety reserve point, what we talked about there is what to do with cash proceeds that come in while we're in a drawdown period. And the feedback from the committee was to take the proceeds, likely from the AEW portfolio, replenish safe reserve back at the target, and then redeploy any excess. So it's kind of a conservative approach, but we're early into this period, and we want to, you know, get that back to target if we have the chance to. And then on the EM debt, we reviewed Ashmore, the current manager. The IAC approved launching an RFP and a search for an EM debt manager. We're going to keep Ashmore in place as an incumbent and let them bid and participate in the RFP process, but also evaluate other options in that space, given their underperformance. And then on the Global Alpha, we talked about we have language in our IPS that requires all public managers to be full fiduciaries to DPFP, and that was a little bit of an issue with their standard commingled fund language. And post the committee meeting on March 24th, they've been more flexible, and I think we're to a point where we're able to meet that criteria in IPS and still invest in their commingled fund. So we thought we might be able to put stuff there, but they were flexible and we're moving forward. So any questions?
Do you and Gilbert feel like the committee has kind of found its sea legs in terms of what it will do is sort of a process in terms of repetition, and this is sort of the scope of what we're looking at, and do you all feel like you have common mind around that?
Yeah, I mean, we have new members, but like compared to 2 years ago, I think we are definitely in a good flow. I feel like some of the early IAC meetings, the members would show up, and we're just recapping what the board talked about.
Yeah.
So I think we have a good flow of what's an IAC item, what do they dive into, what comes back to the board, what goes to you guys, you know, the private stuff, just given the monthly meetings and cadence, more the board realm right now. But I feel like we're in a good flow.
Okay, Gilbert, do you concur with that?
I do, and I also think the staff has a good rhythm on what to bring and how to bring it in the order, and I think it's flowing very, very well. And just remember, it's a pretty high-powered group. The amount of years' experience is very extensive on average on just every single person. So I think it's dynamite.
Great.
I have one follow-up question on the Ashmore issue.
Mm-hmm.
You said you're putting out RFP.
Yeah, we're doing a review of the universe right now. We have a call with Makeda on Monday to try to narrow it down. I expect we'll probably be able to issue an RFP by the end of April.
So the thought process behind allowing them to continue, even though they're underperforming, what was that thought process?
So we want to use the RFP period, which will be 3 to 4 months, to better understand the drivers of the underperformance. I think terminating them right now, that they're, if we look at like a rolling 3-year chart, their underperformance is, they typically recover, and it would be a bad time to make a change and then not have a replacement in that space given the underperformance EM debt and EM overall. So we want to maintain exposure in EM debt. We, you know, may still gain more conviction in Ashmore. And so it's kind of a dual, let's dive deeper on Ashmore, what's going on, and do we want to, you know, maintain them as the manager and then also look at options. You know, most of the RFP, or all the RFPs we've done since the new board came in formation was really, we're adding a small cap, we're adding a core bond where we didn't have income in place, and this is the first time we're doing kind of a search for a space we're already allocated to.
Yeah, I mean, you really don't want to get out of the asset space altogether. And if it's only a 3-month process, it's not going to hurt you that much, so it makes sense to keep the exposure if we believe in it.
In a 3-month process, you're looking at other managers?
Yeah, so it's probably a little bit more than 3 months, but we got approval at March IAC. You know, we could probably reasonably get back to the board with the options to look at IAC and over the summer. But, yeah, so we would issue an RFP. Typically, those go out to 6 to 8 managers that we select. We'll check in with IAC at a few points along the way. Here's who we want to send them to. Here's who we're going to interview. And then we've been bringing 2 finalists back to the IAC to interview and then back to the board. So
I just want to make sure that we're communicating to a broader group that we're not okay with underperformance.
Yes.
Because that's the way it kind of came off,
mm-hmm.
was that we know they're underperforming, we're going to keep them around anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, it's been a tough space, and, you know, there's a lot of people that have been underperforming in EM and just
right.
given what's going on. So just the end point of, you know, all these geopolitical risks kind of hit them all at once. And, you know, they're a solid manager, the product struggle, but we'll make a decision on, you know.
Okay. Thank you for the explanation.
All right. Ken, any feedback from the IAC meeting?
No, I mean, it was great as far as having the extra individuals there. That was a great call, and it's wealth of knowledge is insurmountable. I mean, that's really good, and I really look for a lot. excuse me. I look for a lot of positive coming forward from the large group.
Great.
All right.
Ryan?
Moving on to private asset cash flow presentation. Okay, we'll hit this pretty quickly because most of it is coming from Ron's portfolio. And I'd point out, on 126 in closed session, this is the detailed schedule, asset by asset, of the roll forward. And the numbers match, kind of we tied it to the AEW presentation as far as what's left, what's coming back in 2022. What the NAV looks like. So, ended the quarter with $535 million in private assets, about 28% of the portfolio. We've gotten $1.2 billion in distributions back since September of 16, and then since the new board formation in September of 17, $750 million in distributions. For the first quarter, there's very little activity, and we've talked about it. I expect, you know, outside of AEW's portfolio, we have, you know, it can be lumpier. There's not as many sales in the hopper on real estate, you know, that we have surety that they're going to close. So a lot of the distributions in the schedule are now shifting from real estate and AEW to private equity, where we're just taking a fund and saying we don't have pure visibility into when it's going to sell, but we're assuming a 2 to 3 year schedule. So we got $9.8 million back in Q1. $7.8 million was from the Eagle land sale that Ron talked about, and then we got $2 million of ag income on the Hancock portfolio. That's pretty typical to get, you know, $1 to $2 million a quarter out of that portfolio in income. And then we funded $742,000 on the Lone Star Bridge loan that goes to Conway.
How big is that money total?
We're at, we funded $3.3 million into it now.
And how much is that?
There's nothing, every time, because the process has taken longer for removal, every time we need to fund it through that, you know, mechanism, the bridge loan, we do a new note and increase it. So there's nothing left to draw. We fund it ad hoc. The note increases. We have a note to the new GP in the fund. We have a note to.
But we get repaid once they start selling portfolio companies.
We get repaid. I mean, I don't know. Should we talk more about this? In,
yeah, we'll talk about this.
Yeah. I think we should, it's more appropriate to talk about when we go into Lone Star.
Okay.
Quarterly cash flows. You can see the distributions by quarter in blue, and then capital calls in orange. As I said, $9.8 million came back in Q1. Here's where I'll talk a little bit about the forward projections and what the assumptions on this schedule are driving going forward. We're assuming $151 million net comes back over the next three quarters in 2022. About half of that's coming from real estate. And 90% of the stuff coming from real estate has come from AEW. So AEW is driving roughly almost half of the assumed distributions through year end. Mike, do you want to give a quick update on the L&B property that we talked about last month?
Yeah, so we talked about this last month, and you guys asked for an update. So we're currently in the sales process. We received 8 bids. We're going back to the top three, best and final. All three of the offers are above current carrying values, so it's positive. And we expect a sale in the middle of sometime in the summer this year.
Okay, this is which property again?
The Kings Harbor Retail Center, retail office center in Kingwood. We did a deep dive on review of it last month. The offers were quite a bit above carrying value. So good news there is that property's been, we've been trying to sell that for a while. So good progress on leasing, and we should have a sale this summer.
Yeah, that was the one I got hit with the hurricane.
So, I mean, once that cleaned up, all that's left in real estate is really AEW and Claria. So private equity driving about another quarter of the distributions in 2022. All of that is not the Lone Star, so we'll see. But there are things moving that could occur. And then the other quarter of it would come from infrastructure and the Maritime Fund, the J.P. Morgan Maritime Fund, written up quite a bit last year, given what's going on in the shipping industry. We're starting to see some distributions back from that fund. We just got $4.8 million in April, so it's not included in the Q1 number, but we expect that that'll be a pretty consistent distributor of capital the rest of the year.
How much is that investment?
Scotty did like $44 million for us?
Yeah, about $48.
Okay. Yeah, so that's up quite a bit. I mean, it was marked up quite a bit, and they're getting towards the end of the term, so they're selling in the sales process on quite a few of the ships. This chart shows what is left and what portion of what is left is classified as legacy. So we have just over $300 million in legacy in AV right now. And kind of going back to page 126, that's everything in yellow, the trouble, you know, the unique assets in the portfolio. So it's just over half. It's expected to be a large part of what's left in the private asset portfolio at year-end 2022, and then a little bit left in the year-end 2023. And then just a reminder, our long-term target allocation to private assets is 15%, 5% private equity, 5% real estate, 5% ag. I'd expect, based on our forward projections, we would get down to that level sometime in 2023. We'll get there quicker, probably in private equity. We're at target, basically, in ag and plan to keep that, and then real estate will take a little bit more time. I think the conversation that we may have with IAC first and towards the end of this year and into early next year, when do we start reinvesting in private assets? What does it look like? How do we want to reallocate to private equity and real estate, and how is that different? And given we haven't made a new commitment to private equity in 5 years, 6 years, you know, how do we get exposure, the type of exposure we want?
And to that point, as you approach 20, I mean, are you stuck with just the stuff you can't get rid of, and that's your allocation?
We'll go back to the prior slide, because that kind of tells you that the legacy is the stuff that...
No, but what I'm saying is as we, you know, sell our assets, and we're starting to reach that allocation, my concern is that allocation is not fully workable private equity. It's still enough of the legacy that it doesn't, it's not meaningful. So even though we hit the 15, they're not, it's not good stuff. It's just
well,
a drag.
You can see the far right end of 2023, the legacy is not a big.
And all the legacy in 2023.
Like it's 30 or 40 million maybe.
It's basically like, it's the red, it's the good legacy
yeah.
that's left. It's the piece of red that's left at the end of 2023, which could happen quicker. You know, in private equity, we're really not going to be able to make new investments until we get, like, all of the private equity we have right now is in this stuff that's troubled, and we're not going to make new investments until that's gone. So it's going to
that's
be,
what I mean. It's
the,
like
the time is going to be, we're already in that situation where all our exposure is troubled GP exposure, so we're just not going to make new investments until
and you need to start thinking of a game plan for that, I think.
I mean,
you don't want to jump back right in with a full allocation. You want to gradually build it in so you don't have cyclical issues
yeah.
and things like that. And what kind of partnerships were you invested in, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
The point, what's that allocation going to mean for the overall assumption rate when we're really, when that is not even really helping us at all? So my point is,
yeah.
then you're really looking at a fixed on what's our liquid fixed income and equity exposures, because and that's going to be ugly.
Yeah. So I we start talking to Makita about what does the pension plan look like, what size commitments do you make for a $100 million allocation for a $2 billion pension plan, do you look at a secondary fund to kind of backfill some vintage exposure, and, you know, there's some options. We're thinking about them. We'll start talking to Makita, and then we'll probably have an item at the IAC at some point later this year.
That'll be quite a change. It'll be like those LNG terminals. They've turned them around from importing to exporting.
I mean, like, I know this sounds weird, but I was just thinking, like, do you increase the private equity allocation such that you're kind of still, you start to allocate while you're still getting rid of? Do you see what I'm saying? But do we have to go zero?
No, I don't think we have to go zero. I think,
right.
You know, we want to get back below our current target before we start making new investments. And
okay.
That may happen quicker in private equity versus real estate. And
if we write them down.
I mean, most even if you committed today, you wouldn't be funding for 3 to 4
yeah.
years. I mean, it would be ratably over
saying.
A period. So you got to start thinking of how would we do this at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, given our history, we have a lower target allocation to privates than most plans do.
You got a higher liquidity issue than most.
Yeah, we have a higher, given our cash outflows and where we've been on private.
That's got to be factored into
yeah.
it as
yeah.
well.
Do you have to use Makita, or can you use that a gatekeeper for private equity?
So the way we're contracted with Makita right now is they do reporting on private equity, but they're not, because we knew we were going to do any privates for a long time once we hired them in 18, we didn't hire them to do private equity
right.
for us. So if they handle searches for us, it could be an ad hoc fee. Like, that's another topic to go into as far as how do we evaluate new private investments and how does our current consultant work with us on that, or, you know, what the options are.
Could get somebody else. Just
we could. Yeah.
Tina would, I'm a believer, instead of a broad-based private equity, I'd own Blackstone, Apollo, KKR, and those public equities. I think they do everything for you. A private equity allocation does.
And then a terrible.
But those would be good problems to have
yes,
as a result
yes,
of,
yes.
of you know, the what you all have done in terms of monetizing, and another really great road sign of confidence is what it says to me. So.
And I guess overall, I'm just saying that this to that we need to be thinking about it for now, for then, and that's going to be the allocation that I believe will be the most helpful and us getting to that assumption rate, I believe.
Yeah. You know, the fees in all these projects are just so egregious.
Agreed.
To make new decisions where you're paying out these sort of fees.
2 and 20?
Yeah.
I think they're down a little bit, but not much.
I mean, after closed session, you may not want to ever do a private equity investment again, so we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys did a great job. I mean.
Well, we're letting Germany rearm, so, you know.
Oh, God.
All right, we'll wrap it up there. I don't have a thank you slide, but thank you guys. Kelly, you want to put yours.
Thank you. Okay, this is definitely the easier part of the agenda. We thought we'd start with AEW and make it easier from there. So this item, I just wanted to let you know that Melissa and I have been working on developing a comprehensive employee handbook, which we haven't had before. What we currently have is a series of employee policies and rules and then miscellaneous policies, some of which were adopted by the board, some weren't. And I'm modernizing the policies. Some of them are decades old. And also looking at revamping some of the employee benefits because there's a couple of things that aren't really working for us and don't seem to have the desired result that we want. So it's a big project, and it's something that I don't want to present to the board all in one meeting and feel like there's a lot here. I need time to consider it. So my plan with this, today I'm just letting you know this is coming. Next week I have a meeting with a group of employees to talk about some of the benefit changes that I think might be worth considering. And then from there, my plan is to tweak the handbook that I have right now, the draft that we have right now, and send it out to you all well before the posting of the May agenda to give you a little extra time to look at it if you want. And if you have any comments or questions or concerns about it, prior to the time that we post the May agenda, which is May 6th, you know, feel free to call me and give me any input, and I'll incorporate what I can into that May 6th posting. In May, again, because it's a big item, I'm not asking for your approval at that time. You'll get to see it once. I'm not going to go over all. Right now it's about 40-something pages. I'll talk about the highlights in May and then make any changes that are necessary for June and then ask for your approval in June. So that's what I'm doing with this item. Any questions or concerns? The only thing, just to be cautious of, we don't normally send out agenda items like this, and you're all well aware of open meetings rules, and you can't communicate between yourselves. So if you have concerns or questions, filter them to me and don't copy everybody on them, and we'll be fine with that.
And again, this is important, I think, first of all, to communicate to the members, and that's what I'm assuming this piece of distribution is.
This is the employee policies, the staff policies.
Okay.
It'll be available to the members, too, so they can see that we're not, you know, my plan is to not increase employee benefits and not decrease the employee benefits. You know,
okay, gotcha.
Just to modify them and then to put good working policies in place that are kind of, you know, contemporary with the world around us today.
Will there be disciplinary, like, discussions in there or no?
Well, there is a section on kind of acceptable behavior and that type of thing, yes. So, you know, confidentiality, sexual harassment, all kinds of things like that. It's very comprehensive.
Okay.
So that's the plan with this item. You'll see it for a few times before we ask for your approval or not. And then we'll also ask for you to rescind whatever policies the board has adopted that are incorporated into the handbook. The next item is the monthly contribution report. This item, which is page 77 of the materials, is consistent with what you've seen now for basically a couple of years. We're on track. The actual contributions were 103% of the hiring plan and 95% of the four. And we had two pay periods in February. This is the February data. We received $12,086,000 from the city from the four, which was about $600,000 more than actual. The number of employees that are actually hired are down 176
fire is up 61 and police is down 31, but nothing's changed from what you've seen month after month after month. But we will, I mean, this is concerning going forward on in those out years. If the city is going to be able to meet their hiring plan going forward, they need to really start increasing this hiring. I know they're trying. Any questions on the contribution plan? Okay. This next item is the normal board approval for education and travel. On page 83 are some classes you're welcome to sign up for if you'd like, or we can add anything to your list. If you'd like us to put it on here, just let us know. Carol can take care of that for you. Anybody want to attend any of these classes or questions on this list?
You go to Washington, you get a free bus ride from the border, can't you? You can drive down there. Well, we don't have to pay for travel.
You don't have to wear a mask after indoor meetings, I just learned.
Okay. So related to that, and some of you have seen this before and some of you haven't, when we do have a board member that attends a travel or a training exercise, then we ask after that they've been if they want to comment on it, whether it's good. Why? I mean, not a whole in-depth presentation, but just some noteworthy things so trustees can decide in the future if they might want to go to the same thing. So we did have the trustee or the TechSpurs annual conference that was in Fort Worth last week, and Ken, Tina, Armando, and Gilbert all attended that. Any of you want to provide any thoughts on the conference?
Since no Disney reps are here, I'll say ladies first.
This is my first. It's interesting. The two things that jumped out at me is a lot of discussion on investing in infrastructure. A lot of discussion about investing in infrastructure. The second thing that I found very interesting was this whole PBR issue. This whole, like, 20-year... There seems to be an overall consensus over the pension systems that this is ridiculous. That this is, especially some of it, like, you know, you're talking about ours being bad, but then anything, you could throw a dead cat at anything in Illinois, and it is really bad. And they're like, I don't understand how that's going to work in our world. And so there seems to be a lot of confusion, even though they presented. And they said that they took a lot of pensions opinions, or like, it just seems like it's not just a challenge for us, that everybody was very vocal about this being almost like a fool's errand.
Just to give you a little more background on that, so you'll recall in the last legislative session, the legislature lowered the funding requirements from plans through the Pension Review Board, the PRB, to be 30 years to fund versus 40 years to fund, and what that's done is now thrown a lot of plans that were between that 30 and 40 years now into the mix where they're going to have to come up with a new plan, and they have until 2025 to do that. If they do it in time, there's some grandfathering provisions. If they don't, then it's worse for them going forward. We were already in that same boat because of our legislative requirements, so for DPFP, I don't think it really changes much for us, although it does clarify to the city that we need to be at 30 years to fund versus 40 years to fund when we come up with our fix. But there are a lot of plans, including the city's employee plan, that really are upset about the change. But it's a legislative change, so it is what it is.
If you look at it, though, from a, you know, fulfilling the obligation that everybody has, that's a good thing. I mean, it probably should be even less than 30 years. It probably should be 10 or 20 years. So, I mean, it puts a burden for people to put money into their plans to fund them properly to meet those benefits. So,
And it seems like some of the smaller plans that are, like, are getting a pension obligation bond. So they're getting these, like, crux of, like, $30 million, $40 million to kind of, for now, for that purpose of that. And some of them don't even have the staff to kind of invest. It's kind of this, I've been hearing a lot of problems around it in trying to resolve it or trying to be complicit to that regulation, and it's just a little bit of a...
So to make sure we're staying on the subject so Josh doesn't have to pull us back.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's me. So the discussion of the funding sounding restoration plan was to piggyback on what
Tina was saying, and it was an agenda item that was on the conference. In addition, the POBs was an agenda item on the conference.
Thank you.
So, okay, thank you. Sorry. But I'm just saying that really stuck out as a big, interesting conversation piece.
Question, you said POBs were on the agenda.
Yes.
Were people moved? They were against POBs for a while. They moved in a different direction.
This was two plans that have issued POBs, a small plan, Longview.
Longview and
El Paso.
And El Paso.
So they have done POBs.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess both of them did it kind of different. I think Longview got $100 million 1 year and then $100 million the next year, the next 2 years or 3 years. But I guess one of the underlying themes of both POVs was how they presented it to their entities was pay me now or pay me later.
Right.
You're eventually going to have to do it, so why not do it now? And
it's
when
cheaper.
It's over,
yes,
it's cheaper.
It is cheaper.
So that was a good point that both of them made.
So there is a change in the rhetoric around them because pay us now, and we need it because we're now obligated.
One other observation on the funding soundness restoration and with respect to us, the PRB is kind of a little bit of a hurt right now. They've lost their three top people the last 6 months, the executive director, the deputy, and the chief actuary have all left, I think within the last 6 months. So they're trying to find their way anyway, and they're the ones that have to make the rules on the funding soundness restoration plan. And they've proposed some. The plans hate them all, like you say. They hate the plan anyway. They hate the rules.
The presentation was poor, though.
Their
presentation was poor, in my opinion.
And that may be because they're foundering, and they may continue to founder. And that may, I don't know when they'll get their feet on the ground, and that may have an effect on us as we go into 2024 and 2025 because the PRB's got to pick our actuary to do the study and so on. So just hopefully by then they'll have their act together, but that's just sort of out there. So just that, and that may be, like you say, maybe that's part of it. So
this is germane to the topic. there's these educational things that they are what they are and people are attending. I do think it would be helpful for you all to outline what would be kind of the perfect base of knowledge or set of skills that a utopian trustee would have, and for us to self-assess where we individually or collectively are weak. We've done this ad hoc, like where we did the training on the actuarial stuff, which I think none of us would claim we get a pilot's license with it. So I think that would be a helpful exercise would be, someone may feel like they're weak on investments or they don't really understand the legislation or the law surrounding the pension review board. What impact does that have on us? Things like that, I think it'd be good for us, for you to create something that we would be able to respond to and identify where we feel we're weak, and then we are proactive in education or resources.
Well, to your point, Nick, this is germane to the topic because TechSpurs, we don't have a lot of people that go to TechSpurs, right? And I know that the police department and fire department, there's probably members out there that don't even know that this exists. But with the term limits that we have here on this board, we need to, and with what's in, House Bill 3158, with the requirements of the trustees, especially on the police and fire side, those are the types of things that those of us that are sitting in these seats today can take back to the membership and say, this is what you need to prepare yourself if you ever have a thought process of joining the board.
Makes sense. We'll work on that. Any other comments on the conference?
I'll comment quickly because I'm the bookend probably. My first TechSpurs was I think 1991, and I've seen it grow from just a few files in the filing cabinet of Houston Fire to now a very big organization. What struck me was we've been under COVID for so long. I just had this feeling people saw each other for the first time. And so long. And so there was just a whole lot of just a much better atmosphere and a funner atmosphere and those things than normal because there's been such pent-up desire. And I also was very interested that a lot of the sessions were very well attended, which normally they're not, especially the later ones or the early ones. So I was just pleasantly surprised that so many people were engaged, and I thought it was a very, very successful text burst.
And Gilbert did a great job in his presentation.
Oh, yeah.
It's really good. Very educating. Yeah. And another thing I want to add on that, too, Representative Manchia did a spot on legislative issues. And he did a very good job, you know, very good spoken individual. One thing he said that I didn't know that legislators are tasked to do is during the what I call the off season, when they're not in session, they are given, their committees are given tasks. And one of the tasks that his committee has given is looking at regulating crypto. And that's one thing that I liked also about Techverse. They had a crypto session, and it was put on by Coinbase, so of course they sell crypto. But it was very informative, and I'm glad to see that Techverse is keeping its members educated about crypto, even though we're not going to get involved in it. I still enjoy going and learning more about it. And of course, after learning so much about it, the best advice I was given or I heard is if you can't afford to lose $25 million in crypto, don't invest $25 million in crypto. So that's kind of the mantra I'm going with on the crypto. And another interesting thing, after a Coinbase presentation, the very next presentation was by the attorney Bob Klausner, and you know Bob's been around forever.
Yeah.
And his first slide right after crypto was crypto, you know, or no crypto, you decide, you know. So
like,
be careful.
Crypto.
And he did his spot on fiduciaries. Yeah. So that's where his expertise is, I guess. And he went through a few lawsuits out there on fiduciaries, and he did mention the city's, employees one. About their, I think, is their term limit lawsuit.
Oh, yeah.
So, but overall, yeah, it was a good conference, a lot well attended. I said Dallas, you know, we were very well represented in the business meeting as well as the sessions. And I mean, I can't tell you how much Jim Smith, the president, thanked me afterwards about having a full contingent on the business meeting because it was a contentious issue there. And it came out better than the ones that didn't want it to pass could imagine. It didn't even get up for a vote because Longview fire captain got up and said, look, this is ridiculous. I'm pulling out of my part of it, and we don't need this infighting. And then it was dropped after that. No motion was made. So it came out better than I think a lot of people expected it to.
There was also one other thing that I thought that was really interesting was this camaraderie while we were talking about that and what they were saying with the other systems. They were saying, you know, we're going through hard times and the smaller ones versus the large ones, and we all have different issues. But some of them were offering up, you know, their own, their staff in some ways to say, hey, listen, if you're smaller, we're all in this together, you know, call us. Tell us we'll tell you what we're doing. And that's the first time I actually saw people saying, you know, he's like, I've offered it to everybody to call it. I go, he's like, I've never had one call. Because we just need to be a little bit more communicative of what's going on in our system. I thought that was interesting. That's interesting.
Okay.
All right. So,
legal.
I think Josh has more compliments to make, so let's get into it.
Would you like me to do D2, the executive director, before we go into closed session, just to get that out of the way?
Sure.
Okay. So, on D2, the executive director's report, that's on page 88. Your newsletter's there, as always. Open records requests, we've had three open records requests.
all from investment managers. I did get an interesting one. We didn't count it as an open records request, but there is a member who wants to change our name to Dallas Fire and Police. I told him, I went back to 1920, tried to figure out a little history, but didn't spend more than 15 minutes on it, and then told him when we had nothing else to do, we would consider it.
Can you get that member to change the name back on the fire department first? Have him focus on that.
Yeah, I thought that one was kind of funny. The nominations committee, we did have our first meeting with the nominations committee. The process is going to stay the same as we've done the last time. The applications are out and available for members or on our website. We've communicated the call to the call for applications to all of the active and retired members. We've emailed them or sent them a snail mail letter on that. The application deadline is May 11th, and then we have a meeting set up for the committee to look at the applications to see who's qualified and then also for the interview, so that's moving along nicely. The Survivor Benefits Committee has met one time, and then we had some follow-up items on that. We're actually ready to have our next meeting on that, which is scheduled for sometime next week, so that's moving forward as well. That's all I had. Legal.